face looked as if he were in the mood to object, then shrugged. "Fine," he said, in the tone of someone who didn't much care where they went or what they did. "Let's go." Out on the front steps, Simon locked the door behind him with the keys he was still getting used to, while Jace examined the list of names next to the apartment doorbell buzzers.
"That one yours, huh?" he asked, pointing to 3A. "How come it just says Kyle? Doesn't he have a last name?"
"Kyle wants to be a rock star," Simon said, heading down the stairs. "I think he's working on the one name thing, like Rihanna."
Jace followed him, hunching his shoulders slightly against the wind, though he made no move to zip up the suede jacket he'd retrieved from Clary earlier that day.
"I have no idea what you're talking about."
"I'm sure you don't."
As they rounded the corner onto Avenue B, Simon looked at Jace sideways.
"So," he said, "were you following me? Or is it just an amazing coincidence that you happened to be on the roof of a building I was walking by when I got attacked?"
Jace stopped at the corner, waiting for the light to turn. Apparently even shadow hunters had to obey traffic laws.
"I was following you. Is this the part where you tell me you're secretly in love with me? Vampire mojo strikes again?"
"There's no such thing as vampire mojo," said Jace, rather eerily echoing Clary's earlier comment. "And I was following Clary, but then she got into a cab, and I can't follow a cab. So I doubled back and followed you instead, mostly for something to do."
"You were following Clary," Simon echoed. "Here's a hot tip. Most girls don't like to be stalked."
"She left her phone in the pocket of my jacket," Jace said, patting his right side where presumably the phone was stashed. "I thought if I could figure out where she was going, I could leave it where she'd find it."
"Or," Simon said, "you could call her at home and tell her you had her phone, and she could come and get it from you."
Jace said nothing. The light changed, and they headed across the street towards the Seatown supermarket. It was still open. Markets in Manhattan never closed, Simon thought, which was a nice change from Brooklyn. Manhattan was a good place to be a vampire. You could do all your shopping at midnight and no one would think it was weird.
"You're avoiding Clary?"
Simon observed.
"I don't suppose you want to tell me why."
"No, I don't," Jace said. "Just count yourself lucky I was following you, or..."
"Or what? Another mugger would be dead?"
Simon could hear the bitterness in his own voice.
"You saw what happened?"
"Yeah. And I saw the look on your face when it did."
Jace's tone was neutral.
"That wasn't the first time you'd ever seen that happen, was it?"
Simon found himself telling Jace about the tracksuited figure who had attacked him in Williamsburg and how he had assumed it was just a mugger.
"After he died, he turned into salt," he finished. "Just like the second guy. I guess it's a biblical thing, pillars of salt, like Lot's wife."
They had reached the supermarket. Jay shut the door open and Simon followed him in, grabbing a miniature wheeled silver cart from the line near the front door. He started to push it down one of the aisles, and Jace followed him, clearly lost in thought.
"So I guess the question is," Jace said, "do you have any idea who might want to kill you?"
Simon shrugged. The sight of all the food around him was making his stomach twist, reminding him how hungry he was, though not for anything they sold here.
"Maybe Raphael. He seems to hate me. And he wanted me dead before."
"It's not Raphael," said Jace.
"How can you be so sure?"
"Because Raphael knows about your mark and wouldn't be stupid enough to strike at you directly like that. He knows exactly what would happen. Whoever's after you, it's someone who knows enough about you to know where you're likely to be, but they don't know about the mark."
"But that could be anyone."
"Exactly," said Jace and grinned.
For a moment, he almost looked like himself again. Simon shook his head.
"Look, do you know what you want to eat, or do you just want me to keep pushing this cart up and down the aisles because it amuses you?"
"That," said Jace. "I'm not really familiar with what they sell in mundane grocery stores. Mary's usually cooks, or we order in food."
He shrugged and picked up a piece of fruit at random. "What's this?"
"That's a mango."
Simon stared at Jace. Sometimes it really was like Shadowhunters were from an alien planet.
"I don't think I've ever seen one of those that wasn't already cut up," Jace mused.
"I like mangoes."
Simon grabbed the mango and tossed it into the cart.
"Great. What else do you like?"
Jace pondered for a moment.
"Tomato soup," he said finally.
"Tomato soup. You want tomato soup and a mango for dinner?"
Jace shrugged.
I don't really care about food. Fine. Whatever. Stay here. I'll be right back.
Shadow Hunters. Simon seethed quietly to himself as he rounded the corner of an aisle lined with soup cans. They were a sort of bizarre amalgam of millionaires, people who never had to consider the petty parts of life, like how to shop for food or use MetroCard machines in the subway, and soldiers with their rigid self-discipline and constant training. Maybe it was easier for them, going through life with blinders on, he thought as he grabbed a soup can off the shelf. Maybe it helped you keep your focus on the big picture, which, when your job was basically keeping the world safe from evil, was a pretty big picture indeed. He was feeling nearly sympathetic towards Jace as he neared the aisle where he'd left him, then paused. Jace was leaning against the cart, turning something over in his hands. From the distance, Simon couldn't see what it was, and he couldn't get closer, because two teenage girls were blocking his way, standing in the middle of the aisle, giggling and crowding up against each other to whisper the way girls did. They were obviously dressed to pass for 21, in high heels and short skirts, push-up bras and no jackets to keep the chill away. They smelled like lip gloss. Lip gloss and baby powder and blood. He could hear them, of course, despite the whispering. They were talking about Jace, how hot he was, each daring the other to go up and talk to him. There was a great deal of discussion of his hair and also his abs, although how they could really see his abs through his t-shirt, Simon wasn't sure.
Black, he thought. This is ridiculous.
He was about to say, "Excuse me," when one of them, the taller and darker head of the two, broke away and sauntered over to Jace, wobbling a little on her platform heels. Jace looked up as she approached him, his eyes wary, and Simon had the sudden panicked thought that maybe Jace would mistake her for a vampire or some kind of succubus and whip out one of his seraph blades on the spot, and they'd both be arrested. He needn't have worried. Jace just arched an eyebrow. The girl said something to him breathlessly. He shrugged. She pressed something into his hand and then dashed back to her friend. They wobbled out of the store, giggling together. Simon went over to Jace and dropped the soup can into the cart.
"So what was that all about?"
"I think," Jace said, "that she asked if she could touch my mango."
"She said that?"
Jace shrugged. "Yeah, then she gave me her number." He showed Simon the piece of paper with an expression of bland indifference, then tossed it into the cart. "Can we go now?"
"You're not going to call her, are you?"
Jace looked at him as if he were insane.
"Forget I said that," Simon said. "This sort of thing happens to you all the time, doesn't it? Girls just coming up to you."
"Only when I'm not glamored."
"Yeah, because when you are, girls can't see you because you're invisible."
Simon shook his head.
"You're a public menace. You shouldn't be allowed out on your own."
"Jealousy is such an ugly emotion, Lewis." Jace grinned, a crooked grin that normally would have made Simon want to hit him. Not this time, though. He had just realized what it was that Jace had been playing with, turning over and over in his fingers as if it was something precious or dangerous. Or both. It was Clary's phone.
"I'm still not sure that this is a good idea," said Luke. Clary, her arms crossed over her chest to ward off the chill of the silent city, looked sideways at him. "Maybe you should have said that before we got here." "I'm fairly sure I did. Several times." Luke's voice echoed off the stone pillars that rose overhead, striped with bands of semi-precious stone, black onyx, green jade, rose carnelian, and blue lapis. Silvery witchlight burned in torches attached to the pillars, lighting the mausoleums that lined each wall to a bright white that was almost painful to look at. Little had changed in the silent city since the last time Clary had been here. It still felt alien and strange. Though now, the sweeping runes that stretched across the floors in carved whorls and etched patterns teased her mind with the edges of their meanings, instead of being totally incomprehensible. Maris had left her and Luke here in this entry chamber the moment they had arrived, preferring to go and confer with the Silent Brothers herself. There was no guarantee they'd let the three of them in to see the bodies, she'd warned Clary. Nephilim dead were the province of the Bone City's guardians, and no one else had jurisdiction over them. Not that there were many such guardians left. Valentine had killed nearly all of them while searching for the mortal sword, leaving alive only the few who had not been in the Silent City at the time. New members had been added to their order since then, but Clary doubted there were more than 10 or 15 Silent Brothers left in the world. The harsh clack of Maris's heels on the stone floor alerted them to her return before she actually appeared, a robed Silent Brother trailing in her wake. "Here you are," she said, as if Clary and Luke weren't exactly where she'd left them. "This is Brother Zachariah. Brother Zachariah, this is the girl I was telling you about." The Silent Brother pushed his hood back very slightly from his face. Clary held back a start of surprise. He didn't look like Brother Jeremiah had, with his hollowed eyes and stitched mouth. Brother Zachariah's eyes were closed, his high cheekbones each marked with the scar of a single black rune. But his mouth wasn't stitched shut, and she didn't think his head was shaved either. It was hard to tell, with the hood up, whether she was seeing shadows or dark hair. She felt his voice touch her mind. "You truly believe you can do this thing, Valentine's daughter?" She felt her cheeks flush. She hated being reminded of whose daughter she was. "Surely you've heard of the other things she's done," said Luke. "Her rune of binding helped us end the mortal war." Brother Zachariah raised his hood to hide his face. "Come with me to the ossuarium." Clary looked at Luke, hoping for a supportive nod, but he was staring straight ahead and fiddling with his glasses the way he did when he was anxious. With a sigh, she set off after Maris and Brother Zachariah. He moved as silently as fog, while Maris's heels sounded like gunshots on the marble floors. Clary wondered if Isabel's propensity for unsuitable footwear was genetic. They followed a winding path through the pillars, passing the great square of the Speaking Stars, where the Silent Brothers had first told Clary about Magnus Bane. Beyond the square was an arched doorway set with a pair of enormous iron doors. Into their surfaces had been burned runes that Clary recognized as runes of death and peace. Over the doors was written an inscription in Latin that made her wish she had her notes with her. She was woefully behind in Latin for a shadow hunter. Most of them spoke it like a second language.
"Tagiat colloquia, effugiat risus. Hic locus est ubi mors, gaudet succurrere vitae."
"Let conversation stop, let laughter cease," Luke read aloud. "Here is the place where the dead delight to teach the living." Brother Zachariah laid a hand on the door. "The most recent of murdered dead has been made ready for you. Are you prepared?" Clary swallowed hard, wondering exactly what it was she had gotten herself into. "I'm ready." The doors swung wide, and they filed through. Inside was a large, windowless room with walls of smooth white marble. They were featureless, save for hooks on which hung silvery instruments of dissection, shining scalpels, things that looked like hammers, bone saws, and rib spreaders. And beside them on shelves were even more peculiar instruments, massive corkscrew-like tools, sheets of sandpapery material, and jars of multicolored liquid, including a greenish one labeled acid, that actually seemed to be steaming. The center of the room featured a row of high marble tables. Most were bare. Three were occupied. And on two of those three, all Clary could see was a human shape, concealed by a white sheet. On the third table lay a body, the sheet pulled down to just below the ribcage. Naked from the waist up, the body was clearly male, and just as clearly a shadow hunter. The corpse's pale skin was inked all over with marks. The dead man's eyes had been bound with white silk, as per shadow hunter custom. Clary swallowed back her rising nausea and moved to stand beside the corpse. Luke came with her, his hand protectively on her shoulder. Maris stood opposite them, watching everything with her curious blue eyes, the same color as Alex. Clary drew her steely from her pocket. She could feel the chill of the marble through her shirt as she leaned over the dead man. This close, she could see details. That his hair had been reddish brown, and that his throat had been torn clean through in strips, as if by a massive claw. Brother Zachariah reached out and removed the silk binding from the dead man's eyes. Beneath it, they were closed.
You may begin.
Clary took a deep breath and set the tip of the stele to the skin of the dead shadow hunter's arm. The rune she had visualized before, in the entryway of the Institute, came back to her as clearly as the letters of her own name. She began to draw. The black mark lines spiraled out from the tip of her stele, much as they always did, but her hand felt heavy, the stele itself dragging slightly, as if she were writing in mud rather than on skin. It was as if the implement were confused, skittering over the surface of the dead skin, seeking the living spirit of the shadow hunter that was no longer there. Clary's stomach churned as she drew, and by the time she was done and had retracted her stele, she was sweating and nauseated. For a long moment, nothing happened. Then, with a terrible suddenness, the dead shadow hunter's eyes flicked open. They were blue, the whites flecked red with blood. Maris let out a long gasp. It was clear she hadn't really believed the rune would work. By the angel. A rattling breath came from the dead man, the sound of someone trying to breathe through a cut throat. The ragged skin of his neck fluttered like a fish's gills. His chest rose, and words came from his mouth. It hurts. Luke swore and glanced toward Zachariah, but the silent brother was impassive. Maris moved closer to the table, her eyes suddenly sharp, almost predatory. Shadow Hunter, she said. Who are you? I demand your name. The man's head thrashed from side to side. His hands rose and fell convulsively. The pain! Make the pain stop! Clary Steele nearly dropped from her hand. This was much more awful than she had imagined. She looked toward Luke, who was backing away from the table, his eyes wide with horror. Shadow Hunter! Maris's tone was imperious. Who did this to you? Please. Luke whirled around, his back to Clary. He seemed to be rummaging among the Silent Brother's tools. Clary stood frozen as Maris's gray-gloved hand shot out and closed on the corpse's shoulder, her fingers digging in. In the name of the angel, I command you to answer me. The shadow hunter made a choking sound. Downworlder. Vampire. Which vampire? Maris demanded. Camille, the ancient one. The words choked off as a gout of black clotted blood poured from the dead mouth. Maris gasped and jerked her hand back. As she did so, Luke reappeared, carrying the jar of green acid liquid that Clary had noticed earlier. With a single gesture, he yanked the lid off and sloshed the acid over the mark on the corpse's arm, eradicating it. The corpse gave a single scream as the flesh sizzled, and then it collapsed back against the table, eyes blank and staring. Whatever had animated it, for that brief period, clearly gone. Luke set the empty jar of acid down on the table. Maris. His voice was reproachful. This is not how we treat our dead. I will decide how we treat our dead, Downworlder. Maris was pale, her cheeks spotted with red. We have a name now. Camille. Perhaps we can prevent more deaths. There are worse things than death. Luke reached a hand out for Clary, not looking at her. Come on, Clary. I think it's time for us to go.
So you really can't think of anyone else who might want to kill you? Chase asked, not for the first time. They'd gone over the list several times, and Simon was getting tired of being asked the same questions over and over. Not to mention that he suspected Jace was only partly paying attention. Having already eaten the soup Simon had bought, cold, out of the can, with a spoon, which Simon couldn't help thinking was disgusting, he was leaning against the window. The curtain pulled aside slightly so that he could see the traffic going by on Avenue B, and the brightly lit windows of the apartments across the street. Through them, Simon could see people eating dinner, watching television, and sitting around a table talking. Ordinary things that ordinary people did. It made him feel oddly hollow.
Unlike in your case, said Simon. There aren't actually all that many people who dislike me.
Jace ignored this.
There's something you're not telling me.
Simon sighed. He hadn't wanted to say anything about Camille's offer, but in the face of someone trying to kill him, however ineffectually, maybe secrecy wasn't such a priority. He explained what had happened at his meeting with the vampire woman, while Jace watched him with an intent expression. When he was done, Jace said,
Interesting. But she's not likely to be the one trying to kill you either. She knows about your mark, for one thing. And I'm not sure she'd be keen to get caught breaking the accords like that. When downworlders are that old, they usually know how to stay out of trouble.
He set his soup can down.
We could go out again, he suggested. See if they try and attack a third time. If we could just capture one of them, maybe we...
No, said Simon. Why are you always trying to get yourself killed?
It's my job.
It's a hazard of your job, at least for most shadow hunters. For you, it seems to be the purpose.
Jace shrugged.
My father always said, he broke off, his face hardening. Sorry, I meant Valentine, by the angel. Every time I call him that, it feels like I'm betraying my real father.
Simon felt sympathetic towards Jace despite himself.
Look, you thought he was your father for what, 16 years? That doesn't just go away in a day. And you never met the guy who was really your father. And he's dead. So you can't really betray him. Just think of yourself as someone who has two fathers for a while.
You can't have two fathers.
Sure you can,
Simon said.
Who says you can't? We can buy you one of those books they have for little kids. Timmy Has Two Dads, except I don't think they have one called Timmy Has Two Dads and one of them is evil. That part you just... going to have to work through on your own.
Jace rolled his eyes.
It's fascinating, he said. You know all these words, and they're all English, but when you string them together in sentences, they just don't make sense.
He tugged lightly on the window curtain.
I wouldn't expect you to understand.
My father's dead, said Simon.
Jace turned to look at him. What?
I figured you didn't know, said Simon. I mean, it's not like you were going to ask or are particularly interested in anything about me. So yeah, my father's dead. So we do have that in common.
Suddenly exhausted, he leaned back against the futon. He felt sick and dizzy and tired, a deep tiredness that seemed to have sunk into his bones. Jace, on the other hand, seemed possessed of a restless energy that Simon found a little disturbing. It hadn't been easy watching him eat that tomato soup either. It had looked too much like blood for his comfort. Jace eyed him.
How long has it been since you, ate? You look pretty bad.
Simon sighed. He supposed he couldn't say anything after pestering Jace to eat something.
Hang on,
he said.
I'll be right back.
Peeling himself off the futon, he went into his bedroom and retrieved his last bottle of blood from under the bed. He tried not to look at it. Separated blood was a sickening sight. He shook the bottle hard as he headed into the living room, where Jace was still staring out the window. Leaning against the kitchen counter, Simon unscrewed the bottle of blood and took a swig. Normally, he didn't like drinking the stuff in front of other people, but this was Jace, and he didn't care what Jace thought. Besides, it wasn't as if Jace hadn't seen him drink blood before. At least Kyle wasn't home. That would be a hard one to explain to his new roommate. Nobody likes a guy who kept blood in the fridge. Two Jaces eyed him. One, the real Jace, the other his reflection in the windowpane.
You can't just skip feeding, you know.
Simon shrugged.
I'm eating now.
Yeah, Jace said. But you're a vampire. Blood isn't like food for you. Blood is... blood.
That's very illuminating.
Simon flung himself into the armchair across from the TV. It had probably once been a pale gold velvet, but was now worn to the grayish pile.
Do you have a lot of other profound thoughts like that? Blood is blood. A toaster is a toaster. A gelatinous cube is a gelatinous cube.
Jace shrugged.
Fine. Ignore my advice. You'll be sorry later.
Before Simon could answer, he heard the sound of the front door opening. He looked daggers at Jace.
That's my roommate, Kyle. Be nice.
Jay smiled charmingly. I'm always nice. Simon had no chance to respond to this the way he would have liked. For a moment later, Carl bounded into the room looking bright-eyed and energetic.
Man, I was all over town today, he said. I almost got lost, but you know what they say. Bronx is up, battery down.
He looked at Jace, registering, belatedly, that there was someone else in the room.
Oh, hey, I didn't know you had a friend over.
He held out a hand.
I'm Kyle.
Jace did not respond in kind. To Simon's surprise, Jace had gone rigid all over, his pale yellow eyes narrowing, his whole body displaying that shadow hunter watchfulness that seemed to transform him from an ordinary teenage boy into something very much other than that.
Interesting, he said. You know, Simon never mentioned that his new roommate was a werewolf.
Clary and Luke drove most of the way back to Brooklyn in silence. Clary stared out the window as they went, watching Chinatown slide past, and then the Williamsburg Bridge lit up like a chain of diamonds against the night sky. In the distance, out over the black water of the river, she could see Renwick's, illuminated as it always was. It looked like a ruin again, empty black windows gaping like the eye holes in a skull. The voice of the dead shadow hunter whispered in her mind, "The pain. Make the pain stop." She shuddered and drew her jacket more tightly around her shoulders. Luke glanced at her briefly but said nothing. It wasn't until he had pulled up in front of his house and killed the engine of the truck that he turned to her and spoke. "Clary," he said, "what you just did?" "It was wrong," she said. "I know it was wrong. I was there, too." She swiped at her face with the edge of her sleeve. "Go ahead and yell at me." Luke stared through the windshield. "I'm not going to yell at you. You didn't know what was going to happen. Hell, I thought it might work, too. I wouldn't have gone with you if I hadn't." Clary knew this ought to have made her feel better, but it didn't. "If you hadn't thrown acid on the rune, but I did. I didn't even know you could do that. Destroy a rune like that? If you disfigure it enough, you can minimize or destroy its power. Sometimes in battle, the enemy will try to burn or slice off a shadow hunter's skin just to deprive them of the power of their runes." Luke sounded distracted. Clary felt her lips tremble and pressed them together hard to stop the shaking. Sometimes she forgot the more nightmarish aspects of being a shadow hunter. This life of scars and killing, as Hodge had said to her once. "Well," she said, "I won't do it again." "Won't do what again? Make that particular room? I have no doubt you won't. But I'm not sure that addresses the problem." Luke drummed his fingers on the steering wheel. "You have an ability, Clary. A great ability. But you have absolutely no idea what it means. You're totally untrained. You know almost nothing about the history of runes or what they have meant to Nephilim through the centuries. You can't tell a rune designed to do good from one designed to do harm." "You were happy enough to let me use my power when it was the binding rune," she said angrily. "You didn't tell me not to create runes then." "I'm not telling you not to use your power now. In fact, I think the problem is that you so rarely do use it. It's not as if you're using your power to change your nail polish color or make the subway come when you want it. You use it only in these occasional life and death moments." "The runes only come to me in those moments." "Maybe that's because you haven't yet been trained in how your power works. Think of Magnus. His power is a part of him. You seem to think of yours as separate from you, something that happens to you. It's not. It's a tool you need to learn to use." "Jay said Maris wants to hire a rune expert to work with me, but it hasn't happened yet." "Yes," said Luke. "I imagine Maris has other things on her mind." He took the key out of the ignition and sat for a moment in silence. "Losing a child the way she lost Max," he said. "I can't imagine it. I should be more forgiving of her behavior. If something happened to you, I..." His voice trailed off. "I wish Robert would come back from Idris. said Clary. I don't see why she has to deal with all this alone. It must be horrible.